Hello and welcome to Let's Be Real. On today's episode, we are going to be talking about the top 10 most profitable movies of 2023. Disney Plus and Max are joining forces to offer a streaming bundle. So how does that change the streaming landscape? We got our first look at David Corn Sweat's Superman, Furiosa, A Mad Max Saga, one of our most anticipated movies of the year. The first reactions have dropped from critics. We're going to be talking about Bob Iger's comments regarding the frequency of MCU movies and TV shows. And then we're going to be finishing things off here with the Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes box office predictions. I'm James, that's Nayan, and we're coming to you from Australia and New Zealand. Nayan, it's a pretty juicy potty today. Lots to talk about. I think we should just jump straight to it.
Literally
do it. All right. And for you guys watching as well, if you want to jump into the conversation, because there's some good stuff to talk about here, just comment below or find us on our social medias at Movie Gains. Otherwise, let's get to it. All right. So Deadline have announced the top 10 most profitable movies of 2023. And so to clarify what that means, no, it is not biggest box office movies or box office minus budget. They factor in a lot of different revenues. That includes merchandise, streaming, physical media, theatrical. So it's box office minus all the other percentages, all that kind of stuff. And they also do expenses like participations, residuals, taxes, all that stuff. It's quite complex. I don't know all of the details and how they get all that those details, but they've done the top 10 most profitable movies for us, so we're gonna go straight through this. There's some shockers on this list, Nan. You probably got the list right in front of you. Mm-hmm. So we're just gonna start from 10th and we'll go to the first one. So at number 10, the first shocker on this list, Paw Patrol, the mighty movie, made $114 million for the studio. That is the 10th most profitable movie of the year. Top 10 of the year. And we had a lot of big movies last year, and that's top 10. Nan, thoughts, Paw Patrol, number 10.
It is one of those ones where the mothers had the kids, you know, mm-hmm. for the day, and they just wanted to shut them up. Best way to do it is take them to Paw Patrol.
Paw Patrol's an easy one.
That's crazy. The mighty movie as well. It's Paw Patrol, the mighty movie.
I think it's like the third one that's come out in cinemas, but where this movie gets most of its money is the merchandise or the toys and all the other stuff that it can sell for this. Also, it doesn't need the actors to... they don't need to pay a lot for actors to, you know, go do press tours and stuff like that. They can just chuck some random in a Paw Patrol, like a dog costume, and then walk around theme parks and stuff like that. It's an easy way to promote it without big costs. So that's where it's gotten the profit from. Obviously, not top 10 highest grossing movie of the year. Just that distinction needs to be made quite clear. But number 9, the only Disney movie to be on here, that's Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. $124 million in profit. Nayan, you surprised or unsurprised that it's at number 9 or on this list?
Nah, not really. I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy didn't do that well at the box office, but it's still quite profitable with all those characters as well, so not too surprised about this one.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I think when it opened, me and you were quite concerned because it opened below the second one, but above the first one, and it should have opened way above the second one, and that's purely because the extended or like added exposure it got from those two Avengers movies, they should be way more popular characters now. But still, it opened below and we're quite worried. But the movie was great and it legged it out better than the first two Guardians. So I think Disney got lucky with this one. A top 10 list in terms of movie profit without a Disney movie would have been absolutely shocking, in my opinion. In terms of, speaking of shocking, Five Nights at Freddy's, 8th most profitable movie of the year, $161 million for the studio. Thoughts?
Not that surprising. I mean, it did have like a huge opening weekend, and probably because of this film, I don't know if they factor the game sales, but I'm sure a lot of people would have gone back and purchased the games, and no, they didn't.
Mm-hmm. No, it's not part of it.
Oh, okay, yeah. My point's relevant. Never mind.
Well, I mean, I think Deadline, they talk about it, like, how can you measure that it's from, you know, they watched the movie and then bought the game? If you're factoring in games, then, you know, you've got to factor in, like, every Spider-Man game for Across the Spider-Verse and stuff like that. So it's hard to know where they got it from. I think a lot of it does come from Peacock, the streaming service in America. We don't have that in Australia and New Zealand, but their movie released on Peacock for free on the same day it released in cinemas. It wasn't even like a pay to purchase. It's like if you're a subscriber, you can just watch it for free on Peacock. And it still made $80 million opening weekend. But the amount that it got in terms of Universal purchasing its own movie to put on Peacock, it adds factors into this. That's how some of the finances work for this as well. And it has no major movie stars, so it kept it quite low in terms of the costs, production, participations, all that kind of stuff. Next one we're going to, Taylor Swift, The Eras Tour, $172 million. We didn't even know this movie was coming when we started the year, so I know it's going to be a bit of a shocker that it makes the top 10 most profitable movies, but how do you feel about The Eras Tour movie making it in?
I'm just shocked it's that low. I thought all the Swifties would have, you know, if you said it factored in merchandise, you know, I thought they would have, like, had it skyrocket a lot more.
It's not like that. I don't know. Like, you can't factor in the Eras Tour merchandise with the movie.
So what do you mean by merchandise?
Like, okay, well, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem, the TMNT Mutant Mayhem products that were made, toys, all that stuff that was sold before it. Now, there's a bunch of Eras Tour shirts and stuff sold at a concert, but it's for the concert, it's not for the movie, so you can't really factor that in. Paw Patrol merchandise, toys and stuff, does not qualify for merchandise, but Paw Patrol the Mighty Movie merchandise made for it qualifies. Does that make a little bit more sense?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. Otherwise, these numbers that I'm saying right now would have ballooned to, like, I don't know, $10 billion for Taylor Swift. But, yeah, so it's just more so the movie stuff with Taylor Swift.
Makes sense.
Yeah, and it costs, like, I think, like, under $20 million. It didn't cost much at all because you just need someone to record the actual concert. Yeah, and pay someone to put it all together. So it really didn't cost much. But, yeah, unprecedented in terms of concert movies. Number six, Wonka, $182 million. Surprised that it made that much?
A little. That's actually quite surprising. I mean,
yeah.
I want to be stupid here, and you know, the Wonka chocolates could have, because that's got the Wonka name on it.
No.
I'm just trying to see how far I can push James to getting triggered right now.
Next segment.
this one actually really surprised me. I mean, it did okay at the box office from memory. But yeah, I don't understand what or would have driven it to be that much. I'm pretty sure it had like a semi-decent budget as well. It wasn't that much of a merchandise sort of movie, unless you want a little kid wants like a Hugh Grant Oompa Loompa. So this one's actually shocking for me.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. I mean, yeah. When you start off the year, like, we saw so many, like, great movies. We thought 2023 would be a really, really cool year in terms of big movies and making a lot of money. Wonka being sixth upon that list in terms of actual profit, I think that's surprising and shocking. And I think it actually shows a little bit of the draw that Timothée Chalamet has. A movie that I thought would be higher that comes at number five is Oppenheimer. It made $202 million for Universal. The reason why it surprises me is because of, you know, the physical media record selling out, the 4K, the 900 to 1 billion gross on a $100 million budget movie. Only 202 and fifth for the year. And no nuclear weapons does not count as merchandise. For any countries doing under the table selling off their nukes. No, it does not qualify for Oppenheimer. But a lot of this one, it had $300 million in expenses for participations. And that's like back-end deals for cast and crew. Like, I think, you know, obviously Nolan, the producer, Emma Thomas, Matt Damon, Emily Blunt, Cillian Murphy. If the movie grosses a certain amount, then they get, you know, box office bonuses per se. So they had a lot of extra money outside of the production to pay talent for signing on to the movie. You'll see a lot of these kind of things, you know, particularly with a bunch of A-listers, which I think Oppenheimer has like 50 A-listers in its cast. And so it's like saying, hey, we'll pay you, you know, like $1 million for this movie, which is not much to some of those actors, but if it makes a certain amount of money, we will give you an additional $4 million or $5 million. And then it's like, okay, yep, I trust this director. I can see it making that amount of money. I'll do it kind of thing. I think that's how they really attract those kinds. And that's how you have that low $100 million budget for the movie. But are you surprised as well for only being fifth?
Considering I can see what 4-3-2-1 is, not really. I guess, yeah, it's awesome how it had like a low budget and made almost like $1 billion. And then obviously the physical media sales, as you said, like sold out like what, less than a week? All the physical media as well. So it just goes to show that everyone wanted this movie. So I think fifth is a right place for it. Maybe fourth.
But, yeah.
You know, the next four are just not surprising at all.
Yeah. Speaking of four, it's one that I don't want to say because Mayan is going to hype it up. Look, I can see him getting ready over there. Number four comes Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Mutant Mayhem, at $204.5 million for the studio. Majority of that comes in merchandise because it didn't make too much of the box office.
100%.
Surprise or not surprise?
I'm surprised it's that high on the list, but then I'm not surprised as well because, you know, like, the merchandising for this would have just been a piece of piss. Like, you know, just chuck like random turtle dolls, chuck the logo on there, and boom, print off a lot of money for those, like,
exactly, yeah,
young kids. Easy money.
It's an absolute shock, dude. I mean, look at the top five there, and you don't expect to see that one. And yeah, I think it got like 100 and something million worldwide. That's all it got. And it's like fourth in this. It makes no sense. Like, its profit is higher than it made at the box office. And the studio doesn't get all the box office money. It gets like half of it because they have to pay theaters and all that stuff. Stupid. But some of these movies are purely greenlit for the merchandise. Paw Patrol, the Mighty Movie, being one of them.
100%.
Yeah, but smart move by studios, honestly. Mm-hmm. Moving on now to the top three. These ones probably aren't a surprise to people, but number three, we have Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse at $328 million profit for Sony. This one comes from, obviously, licensing the movie to Netflix to use. It made really good at the box office, had a low budget, I think around the $100 million mark. It had a low marketing budget because it did a lot of brand partnerships with, you know, different brands and stuff, particularly one being at Burger King. I don't know if you ever saw that. We didn't get it in New Zealand though, but Burger King, they had like a Spider-Verse burger, and it was like a red bun with like black seeds.
Oh yeah, I remember you showing me this, and I was like, bro, that just looks like it was going to kill you.
It looks disgusting, yeah. So it didn't need to do so much in terms of the marketing P&R side of things, so hence the very large profit that it made. Surprise it's in the top three?
No, not really. I mean, we already know Spider-Man is like hugely marketable, just the character itself and the hype that this film was getting. The box office as well did better than the first one. So yeah, I mean, including off what you said, the Netflix deal as well, that would have helped a lot. And then you go into the merchandising as well, you know, easy Spider-Man toys, easy sell, easy money, easy profit.
Yeah, nicely said, but nothing surprises you apparently, except for Wonka. Moving on to the top two now. These are not a surprise at all. The highest grossing movie of the year, Barbie. 421 for Warner Brothers. 421 million, that is. Yeah, I remember I saw like a tweet saying the most profitable movies of the year. Here's the top 10. Someone comments like, how the fuck did Barbie make this list? I'm like, what? It's the highest grossing movie of the year. Of course it's going to be on here. But yeah, anyway, Barbie only had a low budget, but the marketing budget, and that's why it's not number one here. The marketing budget was insane. And, you know, it feels like half that marketing budget went to our premiere back in Auckland. just what they did for that screening was absolutely ridiculous. I imagine that every other major city had a very similar one. The marketing was insane for this movie. As you know, it's one of the things that really brought it that massive box office total in the end. But yeah, I know you're not surprised about this one, but $421 million, Warner Brothers got to be happy with that, I'm sure.
Oh, 100%. You know, made, what, $1.4 billion? Almost $1.5 at the box office. Barbie, again, a very well-known IP, you know. easy merchandise to sell. Popcorn, drink, and a Barbie doll. Easy peasy, you know. So, you know, it's just, it's not really surprising. Anything, if anything, I am a little bit surprised it wasn't number one, but then you mentioned all the marketing stuff and then it makes sense. So,
yeah.
It just goes to show that we're going to get a Barbie 2 at some point.
Mm-hmm. Or whatever spin-off comes its way. There'll definitely be something. I'm surprised nothing's been announced already, to be honest. But yeah, number one, not surprising at all. Super Mario Bros. Movie, 559 million. Obviously, you know, you got merchandise in there, but an insane box office total. The budget was 100 million, 50 million from Nintendo, and then 50 million from Universal. I think as well, like, the marketing wasn't too much. Animated movie, it didn't really need to do as much, and it had all these different outlets that could just market the movie. Obviously, it's a massive, it's one of the biggest gaming franchises ever. I think it is the biggest gaming franchise ever by numbers. But not the most popular game of all time. I think it's just the gaming franchise. I know you're not shocked about this one, but I'll give you a little fun fact / question. So Deadline have been doing this most profitable thing since 2015, so by next year it'll be about a decade. So Super Mario Bros., and I did a lot of digging for this one, man, so I appreciate my research for this. Super Mario Bros. Movie is fourth most profitable movie since 2015.
Oh, what the fuck?
Guess the three above it.
Guess the three above it.
Yeah.
Oh, it has to be Despicable Me or something. Like, surely. Like, Despicable Me or Minions. One of those two films has to be in there. I'm going to clump them together and have them as one spot. I'm just trying to think what else came out. Avengers? Nah, because they had like a lot of A-list like actors that they would have to pay. Ooh. Nah, have no idea. I just know Despicable Me or Minions or both would have to be in there somewhere.
None of them are on the top three lists. Yeah, you got one right.
Avengers.
Yeah, Avengers. Which one though? Both or one or?
I'm gonna guess Endgame. No, Infinity War. No, Endgame. Yes, Endgame.
Endgame is one of them. It beat Infinity War in terms of profit. The next one I think was Star Wars: The Force Awakens.
Ah, yes.
Which got like 700 something. That's second, and then third was Spider-Man: No Way Home.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Which got 1.9 billion. But Avatar, The Way of Water. It beat that in terms of profit. And I think the profit for Avatar, The Way of Water is like only 400 and something. So that's shocking considering it's like the third highest grossing movie of all time. But yeah.
And it's not a superhero movie as well.
Yeah, but I thought that was funny. Good old Mario Bros. For coming in the top five there. All right, we're going to move on now to quite big news that came out today. I think this one can change the way we consume media quite profoundly, I guess. So Disney and Warner Brothers Discovery, they are joining forces, coming together and to offer a new massive streaming bundle. It's going to have, you know, Disney Plus, Max, Hulu, all in one. You know, it's going to have all the brands from each of them, you know, DC, Pixar, Marvel, all that stuff coming together. So the major players of these streaming wars, you know, they are trying to expand their offerings. They're trying to collaborate together to, you know, remain competitive in a struggling and declining market, because when it comes to streaming, Netflix is really the only profitable one. As I mean, I think Disney Plus, they just became profitable, and that's like a minuscule amount. So it's, you got to remain competitive in this market, and I think this is the way that Disney Plus and Max are going to be doing it. So, Nan, do you think it's going to be reshaping the streaming landscape? Is this kind of going to be the norm moving forward?
I think we will. It's similar to like a studio buying a studio at this point, you know, except they're not really buying each other out. They're just like merging or coming together to offer a bundle on their own platform. The one thing that is going to hinder it is if they're only going to restrict it to US, because if they're going to restrict it to US, then they're going to take ages it's essentially just going to be Disney Plus carrying the profits there, because that's literally worldwide. Whereas Max, I'm not sure about Hulu, but Max is only restricted to US. So if they do this, they have to like release it worldwide at some point. And that it's also bizarre how Max hasn't done it already. They get so much more profit if they like release it to UK and Australasia and Europe and, you know, everywhere else. So it's so bizarre, and I don't know why they don't do it. So I think if they do that, then this will be a big game changer for sure. And then I think we'll see a lot of other ones do it, especially those smaller ones, you know, like Paramount Plus and I don't know, some other small one.
Can't Peacock? Think of any.
Peacock, you know. just for like a little boost in like profit and sales, you know. I can see that happening.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think this is pretty cool, but you are right. It does need to just expand from just the US, which is where it's going to be launching this year. I like this a lot. I think this is the way to go for streaming, because the problems that I had around these streaming wars is that, you know, majority of the big stuff was on Netflix. That was, you know, the central hub for, you know, you subscribe and you get a whole bunch of stuff that you can endlessly just watch. And that was cool. But then every studio said that they needed to have their own streaming platform, and, you know, they saw potential in it. So it took everything off Netflix, and then you got the sporadic, I guess, environment with just, you know, little bits of good content here and there. And if you want access to all that stuff again, you had to spend like $100 a month on all the different streaming platforms, which no one's going to do unless you're making big money. So I always hated that, but Disney Plus and Max coming together, I think that's pretty cool, because I love the library that Max has. And it's sad that we don't really get it here in New Zealand, but what Max does have, they have all the HBO stuff and they have all the Warner Brothers stuff. Warner Brothers has some really, really great films, and HBO has some of the best TV around. So, you know, you pair that with what Disney Plus is, I think, yeah, that's a good balance between, you know, your nostalgia and franchises with, you know, original and interesting movies that Warner Brothers can offer as well. The only downside you get from Max is the DCEU, which I don't want that on my TV at all. Sorry, mate. All right, before we cap off this segment, so let's say you're going to spend $150 NZD, New Zealand dollar, to purchase a yearly subscription to a streaming service. Now you can choose two studios to pair together for your streaming service. Which two studios or which libraries do you want combined together to get the most bang out of your buck?
Just two?
Just two.
That top one is so tempting.
Disney Plus and Max?
Yeah, that one is really, really good. And I'll probably use it a lot as well. But I think Max is definitely one of them that's locked. What you get from that is just good value. I'll probably have to say Amazon. There's some really good stuff on Amazon coming out lately. So I think probably Max and Amazon would be the way to go for me. And then obviously Disney and Max, because you just get so much content.
Yeah. No, that's fair. I would not have Amazon there. I think it's quite thin on the movie side of things. I would go Max and Peacock, basically Warner Brothers and Universal, because, you know, for those people that don't know how distribution works in Australia and New Zealand in terms of the major studios, Universal and Warner Brothers are joined together. So we get all those invites from that one publicist in terms of our premieres and media screenings and all that stuff. What they do every single year, man, it's just they do really great movies. You know, that's like getting Barbie and Oppenheimer in the same thing. This year, I don't know what you get this year, but yeah, I don't know what you get this year, but you get the majority of the good movies coming from those two studios. I think I would not have Disney Plus. Disney Plus to me is just a place to revisit franchises, nostalgia. If you're looking for a movie to watch that you haven't seen before and you want something interesting, Disney Plus is not the place to find it. It's a place to go and feel comfortable with something that you've seen before and that you loved, either as a child or growing up or whatever. I would go Max and Peacock. But Amazon does have some good stuff. I think they just need to improve their movie side of things.
I picked it mainly for its TV.
The TV is good and getting better.
Yeah.
You know what's not getting better though? DC. And I'm just saying that because we got our first look at David Corenswet's Superman. A lot of different opinions have been going out there about this one. And it's really the first look at anything regarding James Gunn's DC Cinematic Universe, the DCU. Nayan, what did you think at our first look at David Corenswet's Superman?
Well, my very first look before I had to process anything in my brain was I woke up, grabbed my phone, and I was scrolling, and I saw it, and I had to do a double take because I thought it was Henry Cavill. I was like, whoa, he's back. And then I read the caption. I was like, oh, okay. And then I had a shower, and I actually properly looked at it. And I think it was revealed in the wrong way. I think the suit will look better in motion and when we get a proper not-so-CGI'd AI, whatever, you know, rendered sort of photo when it's like actually in a real live action environment, I think it'll look better. But just based on that alone, it's not good, eh? It's like this, the pants is light blue and then like the top is like dark blue and there's like a big black stain across there. Is that an actual stain or is it dirty because he got hit like with a blast or something? I don't know. And then you're bringing back the trunks. The trunks are outdated. Like, move on. Just have a red belt. That's where it's at now. This is the, you know, 21st century, not fucking 19 whatevers. And then what the fuck is happening in the background? I see a lot of people saying, yo, that's hype. You don't even know what it is. It's just a massive green-purple ball thing. Like, why did you reveal it in that way? You could have just had a simple, like, overlook of Metropolis and just have the Daily Planet there. And it would just be so much better. I think Heroic Hollywood did that. They, like, touched it up. I don't know if it was Heroic Hollywood, but I know they either posted or reposted someone's version where they got rid of the shitty black stain. They, like, brightened up the colours. And then the backdrop was Metropolis, and it looked fantastic. Like, I was like, I wish that was the first look reveal, because that looks way better than what we got here. And then the suit is, like, baggy. Like, it's you can see, like, the crinkles. Like, it doesn't look like it's going to fit right. I don't know if it's because he's sitting down, but you're not really showing off Superman's physique if he's, like, wearing a baggy hoodie. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think he's putting on the suit or about to take off the suit in that photo?
He's putting on, but he's taking a long time to put it on. Like, why would he take
it
off?
It's like burned already.
Yeah, but there's a big ball behind him. Like, he hasn't sorted that out.
It could just be a fireworks display. A very impressive one. So we don't know, man. We don't know.
One more thing. And they brought back the curl as well, which I don't have an issue with, but in that photo it looks like it's if it's like gonna be over like here instead of like here.
Yeah.
But it could be the camera angle.
I don't care about the curl. I just feel like if you have the curl, it's just gonna be an absolute bitch to work with in filming. Like, just this doesn't need to be a curl. It's cool. But it's not necessary for live action. I am like you, I had to look at it and I'm like, oh wow, this looks, I thought it was fake and like AI generated. If you had like a really advanced AI saying, hey, imagine David Corenswet and Superman with James Gunn's aesthetic or something like that, I feel like this was exactly what you would get. Especially like you said, the backdrop, I don't think we needed, you know, this big ball of light. But the suit itself, I think it's far too similar to what we got in Man of Steel, but also different in the worst ways. Like, you know, you got the crinkles in the suit. It looks cheap. It looks like you something that you could buy. I think I could go out tomorrow for the whole day and I could find something of this quality. It doesn't look good. I wish it was, and I hope to God it's not an official film still, but first impressions are important, especially when it is the absolute, you know, first look at this new cinematic universe. This is the first thing we're seeing, and this is what it is. I think that's not the way to reveal it. We remember the Batman costume reveal. Sure, the set pics look, the set pics for the Batman, the costume, it looked so bad, but it was like from a set. And then they did like an official reveal. They did, you know, I think it was like the red and the black. It looked awesome.
And then like the score as well.
Yeah. You got a bit of a taste there. This one, it's done the same thing by having a marketing photo as the first look, but just done poorly. Honestly, you probably should have done a video, kept it simple. This just isn't it. I think it sets a bad first impression, and it has a little bit of a sour taste in my mouth. I know it's no reflection on the movie quality itself, and people are probably going to be like, "Well, you're overanalyzing it. It's just a costume or whatever." But I mean, I think these things like they add up and they do affect the way we view a movie going into it. So we'll have to see. It's just one still, one picture, a few pixels, but yeah, it's I'm just curious to see what the trunks are going to look like, because they do seem like they are going to be there. Right. I mean, but like how it's going to look in live action. I know we've seen it before, but now in today's era,
it's going to look weird.
It's going to look weird.
Like even in games and like TV series for Superman, they don't have that anymore. You know, it's just a rip out. So they understand, but. Mm-hmm. I guess Gunn is trying to capture the roots of Superman, you know, the humble beginnings. But if he did that, why the hell is the suit so fucking dark?
Yeah, yeah. No, I completely agree. It seems like it's trying to, you know, balance the best of both worlds there. I honestly think Henry Cavill's Superman suit is as close to perfection as you can get, at least for a modern day version for Superman in terms of the live action cinema. But yeah, that's not going to happen. We have James Gunn doing it. I'm sure the movie will be better than Man of Steel, at least fingers crossed for that one. Otherwise, the question to you guys, you've all seen the picture of David Corenswet as Superman. It looks so much like Henry Cavill, but the suit looks a lot worse. If you disagree, comment below, or if you agree or have more thoughts on it than what we've said here, be sure to comment below and share your thoughts and we can have a discussion from there. Otherwise, we're going to move on to Nayan's most anticipated movie of the year. That is Furiosa, a Mad Max saga. So this has been shown to a select few critics alike. So I've gathered some reactions regarding Furiosa. No official reviews. These are just reactions. I think they're an important distinction because me and Nayan, we cover reactions sometimes. And I'm not going to point any specific movie out, but those reactions don't always result in the or reflect the actual quality of a movie.
The Flash.
There we go. Exactly that one. That one's a horrific disconnect between reactions and reviews. Anyway, some of these reactions. So Heroes Unbound said, Furiosa is a visceral triumph, an epic trip through Miller's scorched wasteland that spans decades. The emotional journey is intimately personal and deeply moving. Action is ferocious, wild, and unrelenting. David Ehrlich, brings me great joy to report that Furiosa is really, really fucking good. Operates in an extremely different gear than Fury Road, in ways that I suspect will frustrate some people, but also manages to make that movie even richer while carving its own legend in the wasteland. Eric Davis said, George Miller's Furiosa is a powerhouse action filmmaking at its absolute best. A ferocious and relentlessly paced epic that expands the story of Furiosa and the wasteland while delivering the craziest chases, the most bombastic characters, and just plain stunning cinematography. Anya Taylor-Joy and Chris Hemsworth equally dive all the way into the wasteland and both deliver some incredible stuff. And our last one here, Netflix Fix. You got to change that name, bro. Furiosa is epic in every sense of the word. The world building and lore expansion of the Mad Max universe is front and center to a bombastic film that has some explosive, exciting action. Taylor-Joy is great, but Hemsworth truly shines in a way he hasn't before. So, Nayan, you're most anticipated for the year, man. Does this give you some confidence, despite it just being reactions?
Yeah, it does. I think the difference between this reactions and other reactions is that this is from actual critics, not like people that were lucky enough to go see a screening or stuff like that. So, it doesn't elevate my hype because my hype is already at peak. So, so it's just good to know that I backed the right movie. Where I backed a good film to be my number one. And just all this stuff saying how, you know, it explores the lore, expands the lore. It makes Mad Max even more. It makes you appreciate Fury Road a lot more. Awesome stuff. So I'm just trying to skim read one of the points. Chris Hemsworth truly shines. I mean, just based on those trailers, he looked as if he was having a shitload of fun, you know, just being a bogan Aussie. And he is an Aussie, so perfect fit. It just looks like as if he's having a lot of fun. And we said that he when the trailers came out, that he could potentially steal this show, and looks like as if he is. So, fuck, May, hurry up. I think 2 weeks. Can't wait.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I mean, I got my invite to the premiere here in Queensland. I'm super excited for this one. My second most anticipated. But one thing that I did want to bring up with you, a lot of these reactions, a common thing is saying that it's a lot different to Fury Road. And I think a lot of you and I, particularly, a lot of our hype comes from how good Fury Road is. Mm-hmm. And we can trust George Miller in bringing us into this universe again. But now that we're hearing it's a bit different than Fury Road, does that give you a little bit of a pause for caution or anything?
Not. I would sort of wish they touched upon how different, like different because there's not that much action, or different because it's more story driven. So I'd like to know why it's different. Those are my two guesses. But I guess different is not always bad, you know. Different can always be good. If anything, it makes me more intrigued rather than off-putting. I just hope that it's different for the two things that I said. Probably not so much the action, because, you know, you can't have a Mad Max film without action.
Without action, yeah. Yeah, so if it's less action-driven, more story-driven, a negative for you, or positive, or depends?
Depends, you know, depends on what the action set pieces do throughout the film. Depends on what the story does throughout the film. We already know it spans decades, so maybe that's what they think is different, you know. It's not just set in a, I don't know, couple of days, weeks, months. It's set over years. So that's probably what's different. It's different to what we've seen in a Mad Max film before. Completely be what they're referring to, actually. So, I think it's just more intrigue and excitement now.
No, I agree. And I am equally excited for it. And more, a little bit more interested to know that it's not like Fury Road. Don't know in what capacity, but it makes me want to revisit the older Mad Max films just so I have a bit of gauge on everything. Because, I mean, I've already going to rewatch Fury Road right before this, obviously. Question to you guys. Are you guys more excited now that Furiosa is kind of confirmed to be good now? Would you want it to be more like Fury Road, or do you want it to do its own thing, establish its own identity, or whatever? Let us know down below. Comment. Yeah, cool. All right. MCU, not so cool at the moment. As we continue to, I guess, shit talk in a way. MCU has been going downhill for the last couple of years, and Bob Iger has spoke on this over the last week. Regarding the frequency of MCU projects, and me and Name, we've covered here on this podcast before about the frequency, about how it's too much content. I don't think me and Name have even watched everything that the MCU has done now, because it's just too much, and we don't really have the time to invest, you know, in TV show, like 5 TV shows a year and 7 movies or whatever the rate is, but it's just becoming too much. But Bob Iger has clarified a little bit on this. They said that the studio is working hard to reduce the output of movies and focus on the quality. He said he's confident on how things are, you know, reshaping. So the output for Marvel movies will be about 2 a year, 3 at maximum. And then Disney Plus MCU series is going to dip to 2 series a year, rather than 4. I mean, 4 was absurdly high to begin with, but it's going down to 2. So you're looking for, on average, 2 Marvel movies a year, 2 MCU series a year, and maybe on some years, 3 films. So, Nan, is this a good rate for you? Is it too much, too little, or just right?
No, it's good. It's perfect. It's, you know, MCU going back to their roots and back to basics. Those TV series, they could just be, you know, not so significant towards a larger story. That's why they have them as 2, but this absolutely had to be done. You know, we can't keep having 4 movies and 20,000 TV series a year. It's just not feasible for a consumer to keep up on every single thing that's happening in the MCU. yeah, it's nothing but positives right now. The only thing that they need to do is actually make sure it translates into quality. Because if they do this and the quality is still dog shit, then MCU's done.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if you saw Kevin Feige's comments regarding the quality. So, you know, they're obviously very aware that people aren't reacting to the MCU in a positive light now. So it seems like they're working hard to change things and actually improve all the projects. And I think it starts with reducing the output, because we heard reports over the last couple of years that Kevin Feige is spread far too thin. And he's ultimately the glue that brings the MCU together. You know, he's that one person that oversees every project. He's deeply involved. He looks at every script, and now he can't because he just has far too much to do, especially when there's four series. I think that's one of the bad things as well. I honestly think that we actually scrap MCU series, no TV shows, go back to the good old days, two, three movies a year, because like those were good. You know, if it's working and it's good and people are loving it, then you don't need to change anything. The MCU series is when it's bad. But if we are going to do series, I think for series to work, it needs to be based on characters that have already been in movies, have already been established in the movies in a prominent kind of appearance, not just a cameo at the end and being like, oh, new MCU series is coming up, but a prominent place in the MCU, at least in the movies. I just, you know, when I'm seeing like series come out like Agatha or Vision Quest, I know Vision's been in there, but it's White Vision and Vision Quest coming out. Like, why would I watch that? I don't feel the need to watch that. And the MCU series, they shouldn't have anything to do with the larger story. Nothing at all. The fact that, you know, Guardians had a holiday special in which it was revealed that Mantis was the sister to Star-Lord. Like, I'm fine with that story decision. It's just that if I hadn't watched that, I would have been like, what's going on? Are they brother and sister now? It's just weird. And who's honestly going to watch a holiday special of Guardians? The diehard fans will, but will casual moviegoers that go and see these movies in cinemas? Probably not. Yeah, so that kind of stuff, it needs to have nothing to do with it. Loki has a massive connection to what's happening in the MCU. You know, the multiverse, the TVA, which is going to be in Deadpool. Like, it feels pretty hard to, you know, follow Phase 4, 5, and 6, the multiverse saga, without watching Loki. That one seems particularly important. If you want to watch Captain America, Brave New World, when did Anthony Mackie's Falcon become Captain America? Oh, wait, you have to watch the series. Wanda in Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, what happened? Like, yeah, it's just these things connect to the larger universe and too closely to really... justify its existence, in my opinion. So the series don't work for me. I don't appreciate the series being in this movie. I mean, in this franchise at all. They've never truly nailed it, but the closest they've come to nailing MCU series is when it's based on a character that have been in the movies. So... 2025 though, it has four movies, so already breaking its newly created rule here. So we have Captain America, Brave New World, Fantastic Four, Blade, and Thunderbolts Asterix. That's what I'm going to call it from now on, by the way, because it's a lazy title. Which one would you remove from that slate?
I don't need to remove any, because I already know that one's going to get delayed or scrapped entirely, and that's Blade. It's not. Set issues, and Mahershala Ali is not even the main fucking character in his own goddamn movie. That's so stupid. Just scrap it right now. So dumb. Or make it a TV series at least. This is a TV series type movie, you know? It's having all these issues. Just cut it up and chuck it on Disney Plus where no one will give a shit about it. Yeah. Otherwise, to generally answer your question, probably Thunderbolts.
Thunderbolts? You're not looking forward to that?
I wouldn't say looking forward to, but it's probably the one that could probably move.
All right, let's say all these movies were going to be good in quality at the same rate, 70% RT. Which one, based on personal interest in terms of the characters, would you want pushed? Like the one you just don't care about?
Probably
still Thunderbolts?
Yeah, just because the characters in that lineup is pretty mid.
Yeah. Is it the worst lineup you could possibly do for Thunderbolts? I mean, Florence Pugh's back is going to be so damaged and broken from that. She's going to have to carry the entire movie.
Is Winter Soldier in it? I can't remember.
No, I don't think he's in it, but I think that other Captain America guy is in it. Oh. The one.
Yeah. See, if you had... You should have had Sebastian Stan in this, like...
Actually, he might be. I have to check with that. It might just be him and Florence Pugh's character that are carrying this movie. But yeah, I like that Captain America guy. He was cool. Interesting character.
He was interesting, like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They just kind of lost it with him a little bit at the end of that series. But yeah, anyway, what do you guys think about this? This has been a big talking point in terms of the MCU because we have been overloaded with MCU content over the last few years. And we're getting to the point now where MCU fans have stopped watching every single bit that comes from the MCU. So is two to three movies and two series good enough this year, or should they reduce it a little bit more, or, you know, bump it up a little bit? Let us know down below. We can have a conversation because I think it should be lower. Two, three movies a year, no series at all. That's just my personal preference. Oh, all right. The box office has been struggling in 2024. I checked the data for this one, and it is down 15% from last year at the same point in the year. So what's the date today? May 9th. Yep, down 15% from last year. And that gets even worse when you realize that last year was a weak year for the box office as it's still rebuilding to the pre-COVID days. The Fall Guy fell flat. It's a pun right there, man.
Crickets.
It fell flat at the box office. I had to do that pun. But yeah, it did not do well at all. I think it opened to $27 million. Not great for a $150 million budgeted movie and to open up the summer movie blockbuster season. But we have potentially our savior here in Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. So we're going to be doing our box office predictions right now. The Rotten Tomatoes score, when I noted this down, was 85% certified fresh. So that's good news. Box Office Pro is predicting 40 to 45 million opening weekend. Deadline's predicting 50 million plus for domestically opening weekend. 130 million worldwide opening weekend for this one. And it releases everywhere excluding China, I believe. I believe none of the Planet of the Apes trilogy, the last one, none of them opened below 50 million. So we got Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, that opened to 72 million opening weekend domestically. War for the Planet of the Apes opened at 56 million opening weekend. And Dawn went on to make 208 million domestically and 710 worldwide. War for the Planet of the Apes went on to make 146 million domestically with 490 million worldwide. So you got a lot of these big publications here predicting a lower opening weekend than the last trilogy of Planet of the Apes. Nain, where do your box office predictions fit in line with these ones here?
That's such a big drop between Dawn and War.
I know, right?
I don't know what happened. Because
they're all so good. So it's like, yeah. Why are people not interested?
And like, can't blame COVID because COVID wasn't around. Wasn't discovered.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I'm still coming to grips with that. Yeah, I think Box Office Pro pretty much has it right. I don't think it's going to reach those heights of 50s. Do you know what Rise made, by any chance?
It was like...
All good if you don't.
I think it's like... It's over 50 million, between 50 and 60. It's in the 50s, alongside War.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Box Office Pro has it right. I think 50, as in literally 50, is the cap how high it can get. God. If I had to take a stab in the dark, I'm going to go 47.5
million. 47.5
million.
Mm-hmm. Getting real specific there. I like it. Yeah, no, it is surprising. I don't know how to explain it. And you know I'm very interested in box office. I've been following it since 2008. I think I was like 12 when I started following box office. I love box office. Just the numbers behind the movies. It's just always something that's been super fascinating to me. And I can't explain this. The series is highly, highly regarded. Some of the best visual effects you'll ever see. And those are selling points for movies these days. So when you got a franchise with a great reputation and it's got a big budget blockbuster effect to it in terms of its visual effects and a large scope, I think it's quite an attractive movie. The fact that it's not attracting anyone here, that surprises me. And it doesn't start now. It started after Dawn. The War for the Planet of the Apes, like you said, opened and totaled way lower than Dawn. War did. So yeah, it is surprising. I think we are going to keep seeing a downward trend for these movies. It doesn't bode well for the future of the franchise. And I'm right with you, man. I'm going to say 46.5 million. We're going to revisit this on Sunday when we do our next potty just to see who's right because we're so close in terms of those predictions there. So yeah, just stay tuned for that.
You went like a million under me.
Well, someone's going to be closer to it than the other. That's what matters, Nayan. But that's what I was going to predict before we started this recording. Anyway, the only explanation I could possibly give for why it's going down is the snail pace storytelling.
Probably.
Planet of the Apes, yeah. And the fact that you're theorizing that they're going to do, Empire of the Apes and then actual Planet of the Apes, it's just six movies.
That was before we saw Kingdom. I don't think that's on the table now.
If it takes six movies to get to a Planet of the Apes, I think, that's too slow for audiences. It's great for us because these movies can explore interesting ideas and we can really get invested in certain characters. But the casual movie-going audience who make up majority of the box office, they're not in for, the slow pace to it. And I always thought back in the day when Rise and Dawn released, and that was 10 years ago, so I was a young boy then, I'm just like, oh, this is too slow. It's going too slow. Now I get to appreciate these movies a little bit more deeper because of what they did with characters. But that's the only thing that I could see where the casual audience have no interest because, why do they have to wait, 13 years for a Planet of the Apes movie where they kind of run the planet properly? Yeah, that's all I can think of. But anything else to add for the box office predictions? No?
No, I'm just shocked about that.
I agree with that. What would you do? We'll cap off the thing. We'll cap off our potty with this question right here. If higher opening weekend than Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes.
What?
Is it? Could if? The oh, movie if.
Sorry, I thought you were saying what if opens. No. And I was like, what?
It's so hard to say that movie without it sounding as part of the sentence. No, the movie if. What do you do if it makes more opening weekend than Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes?
It probably will. Because it's got fucking Ryan Reynolds in it, Steve Carell. It's got a little fucking purple, black, whatever it is, googly thing that's stupid. Ugh. You just know. It's Minions. Just fucking Minions again. God damn.
That movie, man, I'm not looking forward to it. I've only seen that first trailer. I haven't seen anything else.
Me not, me too.
Yeah, but I did see a gift the other day, and it was like this gummy bear, and it farted, and it said sorry.
John Krasinski, what are you doing?
I mean, he's going to be washed before he even truly started. But yeah, I am not looking forward to that one. And we'll cover the box office predictions for when that comes out, which I think maybe next weekend or the weekend after.
God,
otherwise, guys, don't comment about if because we don't want to talk about if. So if you talk about if, we're just going to delete the comment. But talk about Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, the box office predictions. What do you think about this? Where do you think it's going to land on the opening weekend? And even further to that, where do you think the domestic and worldwide totals will sit? Will it be above War for the Planet of the Apes? Will it be above Dawn? Can it get there? Probably not. But whatever you think, comment below and we can have a talk about it. Otherwise, Nayan, that is it for us today. We are done. Thank you guys so much for tuning into this episode of Let's Be Real. We hope you enjoyed our takes and comments and predictions, all that kind of stuff. Your support and engagement does mean a lot to us. If you liked hearing from us, then you can subscribe to us on YouTube. Comment below. We can have good discussions there. I'm having some cool discussions with some cool people. Shout out Simon on YouTube as well regarding Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. So be sure to comment. We can have a chat. If you guys don't want to watch us, then you can listen to us on any podcast platform that you listen to as well. Otherwise, you guys know where to find us on social media. It's at Movie Games wherever you do social media. And yeah, that's it for us. Thanks again for joining us. Keep bringing the hype. Peace.
See ya.